And it is 24 minutes after the hour, a transcendent Tuesday. We're visited and blessed to have Dr. Don Clark with us after a haggarding week in the old vineyard, harvesting grapes. And he's joined us. He lives in Garden Valley, Texas. He's a member of the board at Creation Moments and a biochemist by trade, which comes in really handy in designing wines. You are a wine designer, are you not?
Well, yeah, we try to be. We try to be produce some fine wines.
I just visited your website.
A little hard in East Texas, but we've made some pretty good wines.
I just looked at your website the other day, and you've got some I hadn't heard of before. So you've been working on new things too. That's pretty. And by the way, anybody who's interested, you can link to Valle del Apache from the Broken Road site there on the right hand side of the page. You'll see a link that will get you to Dr. Don's grape ranch, which is in Garden Valley. Beautiful place to be. So how'd the harvest go?
Oh, it was it went well. It was hot. It took us 2 mornings basically. We didn't really work past noon. We picked from about 6:30 till about noon, and then we gave it up. So we picked about half of it one day, and then we finished up the next day. It wasn't as bountiful as we've had in the past for a number of reasons. One was the number of vines that we lost during the freeze, and we're still losing. The vines seem to suffer for a long time. And to the heat probably caused smaller grapes.
Now they say that stress makes better wine. Would you agree with that?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to see if this is the best wine we've ever made.
You should have a new varietal called Agony. And put that up from the
Valle del Apache. Yeah, it was. We couldn't get them. We couldn't get the bricks up, which was it's counterintuitive, because if you have a drier season, you would think the bricks, which is the amount of sugar in the grape.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah,
would be higher. The grapes, I think, just weren't ripening because of the heat. Mm-hmm. So when temperatures get up to about, they say anyway, when temperatures are above 95 degrees, the grapevine pretty much shuts down. And so I think that's what happened. We've had a lot of days here above 100. And so that was probably causing some problems too.
And we learned a new word, bricks. I hadn't heard that word. Bricks meaning the sugar content and the heat.
Yeah, the concentration of sugar. Yeah. in the grapes, in the wine.
Well, you bring up the heat, and that kind of gets us into the topic for today, which is we could call it global warming, or we could call it climate change. Those two terms seem to be interchangeable, although the global warming is on our minds. We've had heat wave after, here in Texas, it's been one long heat wave. Around the country, though, there have been progressive heat waves. And in the Midwest, Kentucky now looking at some very high temperatures after all the flooding and all the rain they've had. So the question remains, is this us or is it nature? Does it always happen? What's going on? There's some charts. In fact, in a minute, I'll put the link to this EPA chart in the window. I did yesterday in the chat window. But you can see a bar graph, and this is of course the first thing you see looking at the EPA graphs, the bar graphs, is climate change indicators, heat waves, is dealing with the heat waves. If you look at just the bar graph, it tends to convince you that heat wave frequency, duration, and intensity have increased by as much as 30% over the past several decades. That is, until you read the fine print. The question is the EPA political? Or are they giving us valid weather information? If you have to, this reminds me of all those pharmaceutical TV commercials, you know, where there's happy, smiling people who have the disease and they're whipping it with this concoction, whether it's a pill or a shot or a process, and then you see all the little print on the bottom of the commercial that you can't read and isn't there long enough to read that describes all the horrific side effects of the drug use, you know, and it's like they don't really want you to know, but they're required to put it there. So they hide it effectively. Is the EPA behaving that way?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the anything dealing with the governmental agencies these days, unfortunately, are trying to convince you of a particular story. So with the CDC, as we've talked about, and the FDA and the NIH during the COVID pandemic, they were trying to scare people into taking a vaccine, which was not a vaccine. Taking a product that not only was not effective in the long run, but it is causing long-term damage to people. As the longer we follow this, the more we find out. And so the EPA is no different. They have hopped on the global warming or the climate change bandwagon, and so they need to propagate false or camouflage what the real information is telling us, as opposed to what they want to say, which is that, hey, we got a big problem here. Here's another scare tactic, and so we need to do something about it. So we got to throw billions upon billions and trillions of dollars at this in order to solve this problem. And so the real question about climate change is, does man contribute at all to climate change? Or how much does man's activity or the anthropomorphic factor actually factor into to climate change? Now, if you look at that article that you put a link to, you go down to the bottom of the article, there's another graph that says heat wave index, and you get as you go down further, get in the 1900s and 1930s, between looks like 1930 and 1936 or so, we had tremendous heat wave at that time, which is on the order of at least three times higher than what we had in 2011. Now, interesting, here in Texas, as you recall, we had a drought. We had a bad drought, and our one-acre pond completely dried up. Mm. And that was the year we planted. The only reason why I remember the year so well is because that was the year we planted our vineyard. And so by the time we got our vineyard in and the plants in, which was in the fall, the pond was completely filled up again.
And, of course, that's your source for irrigation for the vineyard, we should point out.
Yes, yeah. It is. Mm-hmm. And so we see that if you look at that graph, we had a spike in the heat wave index around 2011. And now we're going up, and here it is 2022, and we're getting another spike in the heat wave index, or one could say, hey, what's causing, these spikes? Well, this has been known for a long time, that sunspots have cycles of 11 years. So you take 2011, add 11 to it, then it gets you to 2022. And so we're in 2022, and we've got a tremendous amount of sun activity. And so if you look at, the solar irradiance coming from the sun, you will see that it is increasing because of all the sunspot activity that we have. And that happens on an 11-year cycle.
I should mention, too, that as I understand it, and this is because of the video, which I can't put on the website. I could put a link to it, maybe, but it talks, those measurements of radiation are made outside the Earth's atmosphere by satellites. It's not that there's all this CO2 that's magnifying it so that our sensors on Earth detect this as a radiation increase. These are measurements taken from space, correct?
That's correct. There's actually a specific satellite that was pointed towards the sun, and its job was to measure the solar radiance coming from the sun as a portion of time. Well, Something happened in 19. Well, I guess the satellite ran out of juice or something in 19. Looks like 1989, and so there was a gap between Arkham 1 and Arkham 2. Which, when they finally got another satellite up there in 1991, and so there was a several-year gap there where
they, as I recall, that replacement satellite was supposed to go up on the Challenger space shuttle flight, which of course blew up, never made it into orbit. So there was a delay, right, resulting in a gap in the data.
Yeah, because NASA obviously had a catastrophe on their hands, and so they had to scramble, and the program got put on pause. Now we have SpaceX. We can put satellites up through a private company. We don't have to worry about NASA, although, you know, so it be that as it may, there was another satellite called ERBS that also took irradiance data, but it was pointed towards the Earth, and but one of the sensors actually was at an angle that it could actually also measure solar radiance. So that period between 89 and 91, they used that data, and they then compiled a composite picture as to what the sun was doing during that period of time. And lo and behold, if you use the irradiance data off of the satellite that was pointing towards the Earth, it gave the picture, or it showed the picture, that solar irradiance was going up during that period. And then it started, you know, it started coming back down in 1991.
Just looking at this graph, this heat wave index, that I know not everybody's looking at it, although if you link to that article in our chat window, you'll see it. There was a peak in 2011, which Don was talking about. But if you go back in history, there was also a peak in just about the same intensity in 1901. And again, looks like about 1918 to 1921. And then a huge one in the 30s that again is 3 to 4 times the magnitude of the others. Then it goes back to more normal, 1941, and then about 1954. I'm guessing, I'm estimating the years here. 1980, and again in late 80s there was a peak, and then in 2011. And now they don't have data yet on the heat wave index this year, but I'm anxious to see that, see if it's higher or about the same as has been the pattern through the 20th century.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out that, hey, this is just a common spike in the heat wave, or the if you look at the solar radiance, it's spiking. But here's the thing with regard to this gap between 89 and 91, where there could have been a spike, or it could have been, we don't know, we don't have the data, so we don't really know. After they kind of compiled the two data, they showed, wow, look at this, the irradiance is going up. Then along came a couple of scientists and say, well, no, there really wasn't any spike. So they said, well, there was a malfunction in that particular sensor, and so we're going to adjust the data. And so everything was kind of leveled off. So then they used that to say, to promote the theory that CO2 was, because, you know, at that time in the 80s, yes, we had some CO2, but it's dramatically increased over the last several decades. you know, in our the CO2 in our atmosphere. So they were saying, well, the CO2 is really causing the increase in temperatures, because that's what you need if you need a climate crisis. You need man to be the cause of the climate crisis, and so we must do some drastic things, like everybody needs to drive electric vehicles, and you know, we got to stop burning fossil fuels, for example, that puts CO2 into the atmosphere, and on it goes. Well, it turns out that a reinvestigation of that particular data shows that there was absolutely no malfunctioning of the sensor, that it functioned perfectly. There was no recalibration done, that everything was as it was supposed to. So the original analysis was correct, that there was definitely an increase and in solar irradiance, and it's the solar irradiance that is causing an increase in temperatures here on Earth. And that shouldn't be a big surprise, you know, to anybody, that the sun should have a dramatic effect on our temperature. And in fact, the solar contribution, for example, solar energy hitting our planet is on the order of about 14,000 watts per square meter. So that's a lot of energy hitting, you know, hitting the atmosphere, hitting the surface of the Earth, 14,000 watts. Okay, so all of the CO2 that has been generated to date, the total amount of watts it has contributed to our global temperatures is 2. 2 watts per square centimeter versus 14,000 watts per square centimeter. So which of those numbers do you think has a greater contribution to our Earth's temperature and as opposed, you know, is the sun more responsible, or is CO2 more responsible for changes in our Earth temperature? Well, the obvious answer is, of course, the sun is far more responsible, and you know, 2 is you know, the CO2 is not contributing significantly at all to our global temperatures.
That seems so eminently logical. And again, I want to bring up a trend that, or at least a pattern that is jumped out at me with respect to climate change and pandemics and all these other waves of urgent information that we're getting, is that the data, if it doesn't support the ideological goal, gets skewed and misreported in order to support the ideology. In other words, the facts are not important. What's important is the ideology. So if the facts contradict the ideology or form an opposing point of view, that's got to be squashed. And it's just a disregard for the truth, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's disregard for pure science, and it's disregard for, you know, humanity in general, because you're forcing your agenda on humanity for your particular interest, and it's pure evil in my mind, and it has nothing to do with science, other than you're claiming that science is supporting your point of view when in fact it does not. Now, it's interesting to point this out even further. It's interesting that the World Economic Forum, right, released a video, and we can thank David for this one. It released a video on, hey, we can solve climate change. All we need to do is put up in space the space bubbles that will block out the sun.
Okay, pardon my laugh.
So, are the sunglasses up yet? Are they up?
They're not up yet.
But this, I don't see them.
This is a proposal from you know, from some scientists that, you know, have done some calculations and have said, hey, we can put up these space bubbles to reflect some of the solar radiance, by the way, from the sun, and that will cool down the Earth, which, in fact, it will. But, you know, it could cool it down so much yeah, that it would really have dramatic effects here on Earth.
kind of a trial and error process.
Admitting,
yeah.
They're basically admitting that this is not a man-made problem.
Mm-hmm.
That this is a solar problem, and so we got to solve the solar problem.
You might say they've seen the light.
They have seen the light, and it is absolutely ridiculous. You know, these folks, they talk out of both sides of their mouth, where they actually do know the science. It's just that, you know, with their agenda of trying to get people to into a particular mode of behavior, trying to cause all of these catastrophes when actually there is no catastrophes. The sun is going to continue to shine, and it is going to continue to have sunspots, the increase in sunspot activity over, you know, 11-year cycle, and we're going to continue to see this. Now, it is interesting, of course, that, you know, the Bible talks about in Revelation that as things begin to heat up, if you will, that one of the woes, if you will, is that a third of the earth will burn up, and you know, which will cause, of course, a third of living things to die, and a third of the vegetation to die, and all kinds of things. But that is not, I mean, God may use the sun in order to accomplish that, but that is the wrath of God on earth, because man's hearts have gotten so hard that, and man has become so selfish that they actually, their thoughts are continually, you know, evil, as was in the days of Noah. And so God is finally judging the earth, and one of those judgments is going to be a heat judgment, where you know, a third of the earth is burnt up.
And this does seem does make today's news and the events around the world over the past really 10 or 15 years, and looking into the near future, it looks very reminiscent of how Genesis describes the state of the world before the flood.
Yes, and, you know, if you look at the state of our world now, we are rapidly approaching the time before the flood, you know, where man's, I'm just astonished that we are hearing much more random killings, for example, random, not only random shootings, but random killings, you know, people going into stores and with knives and trying to stab the store owner for no other reason other than stabbing the store owner, because they can. And these crazy politicians and attorney generals that have been put in these various cities are not clamping down on crime, and so crime is going rapid, and the love of many is indeed growing cold.
And the news is filled with that kind of thing again today, as the news machine gets cranked up for the new week and the new month. And so I'm leery of what's to come. Don, we're blessed to have you each week. We've been sharing conversations with Don for now about close to 10 years, and learning a lot about, in particular, the biblical story of creation as it's explained in Genesis, which, again, as we've learned from Don, is not science, not meant to be science. It's history, which facilitates the scientific study. And if you visit creationmoments.com, you'll find a wealth of information, of scientific information, that supports the biblical story of creation, explains it clearly, and shows the really the unfailing logic of the whole thing. And Don, we appreciate the time and the expertise you give us, and we're glad the harvest went well and still got grape skins under your fingernails, I imagine. But, well, you can take care of that. Yeah.
All righty. Well, you folks have a great rest of the week, at least here, us that are in Texas. It's quite warm.
Another 100 degree
days. Continue to be so.
Okay. Well, two new varietals coming forth then from Valle del Apache, Agony and, not Ecstasy, but...
Pain?
But ornery. Agony Pain. And Ornery, where the grapes have been heat-stressed. It'll be a very, very delectable wine, I'm sure. Don, take good care. We'll talk to you next week. Okay. Oh, wait a second. No, I will not be here next week. So.
Oh, you won't?
No, well, the station will be automated next week, so I'll be at a conference. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. Take good care of yourself, and regards to Andrea. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay,
so long. See you, Don.